Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices. All in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5. Then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club! This week, we are joined by my favorite co-host, except for my other favorite co-host, Dan Rosen. We chat about Hannibal Buress's My Name is Hannibal. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. Everyone, hope you're well and having a great day. It is Father's Day, and I thought, who better to have as a guest than my co-host over at Detecting the Marvelous, and also a dad, Dan the Man Rosen. He is a Toronto-based comedian, super hilarious. He has an album called Family Boy. I highly recommend checking it out. But we decided to chat about Hannibal Buress's album, My Name is Hannibal. This is his first album, and it is before he sort of blew up proper, but he is still killing it. An amazing comedian. He worked hard and is just super flippin' funny. Check it out and give this episode a listen. Thanks for tuning in to Comedy Album Book Club.
I don't trust society at all. Some people trust society too much. Some people will lock their bikes, but they won't lock it to something. They just lock the frame to the tire. Because they're like, who's going to take my bike if they can't ride away with it? Who's going to do that? I will. I'll take your bike and I'll toss it into Lake Michigan. I'll toss it to Lake Michigan or whatever body of water is closest to the city that I'm doing this joke in. Because I don't trust society at all. I live alone, and I lock the bathroom door every time I go to the bathroom.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I am joined today by my friend and fellow co-host, podcaster, Dan Rosen. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great, thanks. Yeah, that's right. This is, I'm spreading, oozing into other aspects of the Matthew Ardell podcast universe, the MAPU.
Yes, yeah. This is my version of like a shared universe. Yeah. 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 So you are a great comedian. You do shows all around the city.
Charged.
Yeah. Yeah, you recently featured in a newspaper article too. So, I mean, you're fancy boy.
I did make that Toronto Guardian article out to be much bigger than it really was, but I will exaggerate all promotions to the nth degree.
I haven't been profiled by the Guardian in Toronto, the Toronto Guardian, so that's still something. This is something a lot of people can claim. So wear that feather in your cap.
Oh, thank you. I'll take it. Even though I do feel. More people can claim it than they do. But either way, it was great to have that profile. Woohoo!
So you selected My Name is Hannibal by Hannibal Buress, recorded in 2010. So what inspired you to choose this album?
It's interesting because Hannibal Buress is not really anything like my personal kind of comedy style. Like if I were to do something that was like, you know, a direct inspiration, it would be, you know, like Mike Birbiglia, or maybe I was trying to think of some other good storytelling, telling comics, like, yeah, like Hannah Gadsby, or, you know, like Bill Burr even, and, you know, Pete Holmes. But I just, I mean, one, I love this album. I feel like it's almost like Hannibal Buress filled this void of Mitch Hedberg, where like in university, when I was starting to listen to comedy albums, I had friends who were like, oh, well, you got to listen to Mitch Hedberg. And so I was mostly listening to Mitch Hedberg. Heard about, like, a lot of comedians were talking about Hannibal Buress being this, like, new face in the New York scene, and how he had just kind of done his own style. And he's one of those comedians who you can't really sell a joke of his without doing a Hannibal Buress impression. Like, yeah. There's other comedians where, like, you know, you can just repeat their joke, you know, with the right timing. But, like, Hannibal Buress, Stephen Wright, Mitch Hedberg, you kind of have to do their voice in order for it to work.
Like, so much of it is woven into how he delivers and everything.
For sure. And he completely breaks rules and, like, points out him, like, that he's like, yeah, like, whatever. Like, I know I like things like where he's like, oh, you know, I know in the previous joke I said I had a roommate, but now I say I'm alone. I like to establish different realities for each joke. And I think that is like the quintessential aspect of Hannibal Buress, is that he's not trying to, which is the complete opposite. Like, I'm always trying to like weave things together as much as I can and have things relate. And Hannibal, yeah, he's just sort of like, eh, whatever. Like, sometimes he just has a joke that's like a couple of one-liners. And then sometimes his joke is like, you know, a 3 or 4 minute story, or like deconstruction of something.
Yeah. There's a density, even when it is a longer story. I really enjoyed the one where he's talking about the kid with the basketball team. And then he goes off onto that tangent, like the tangent about pirates, and then gets back. Yeah. And I won't go too in deep into that pirates for a variety of reasons, but it was like, oh, you made that topic funny. That is.
Yeah.
Impressive. Mainly because it wasn't really about that topic. It was about pirates. We talked about
pillaging. Like, no one just pillages anymore.
We'll stick to the pillaging component. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like that whole bit, like, it's like the best. Yeah, like it's like finding a way to make like a joke. Because he's like it's also like he takes it something that is like a very serious topic, obviously, I guess. Or like thing. But like, he's always approaching everything, I feel like, from a cartoon level. Like, you can tell, like, this guy, like, he grew up on, like, you know, like, 90s, like, Ninja Turtles cartoon and stuff. Like, and, like, all these other kinds of, like, sort of, you know, comic book cartoons and all that sort of very, you know, like, almost like an itchy and scratchy version of the world is like his his approach to comedy. Like, sometimes it's like very Looney Tunes. Like, it's like sort of like his jokes are along the same genre of like having an anvil dropped on someone's head, but they're wearing an umbrella, or like,
It's like, you know, he goes from the one joke about the fire SUV. Like, what do they do? From that, to God jokes, and for me seeing a Hasidic Jewish person for the first time on the subway being very confused, thinking they were Amish, to like a joke about onomatopoeia and poets. It's like, you can't find your foot. You can't find your footing, but not in a bad way. Like, there's some comedians where it's like, it's all over the place and it just feels
kind of bad.
Yeah, like unfocused and
almost like desperate. Like, they're like, oh, let's try this joke. Whereas, I feel like Hannibal Buress is just kind of like, fuck it, I'm going to talk about this now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, And I think the pirate, the basketball pirate transition, he was just like, anyways, I got distracted. Back to the kid. Where he's like, yeah. But and I mean, it's funny because there's just stuff I find in there where it's like, it seems on the surface level a dumb joke, but when you deconstruct it, it's really smart.
Yeah.
Like
it's one of my favorite things is when a comedian is very cleverly dumb in a way, like where it's very like it's like they made something that seems so stupid and silly and ridiculous, but it's like, oh, you found a really clever way to do that silly, ridiculous, dumb joke. Like that I really like.
Yeah. And I mean, I actually looked it up. Snickers is a real comedy club. It is spelt with a Z at the end because, of course, it's spelt with a Z at the end. But it's funny. It's like that early bit. It was really like out of the gate, fast and funny. Like started with a couple of really quick jokes, but then like you know he got into the God doesn't believe, or like God does it doesn't work on stupid coincidences. Like, because it's clear he's like, he just doesn't like dumb people. But then he's like, talking about God's hype man and laying down like bad tracks and whack tracks and stuff. And it's like, that's right. But that went into an even more interesting concept to me, which was what if jingle artists had like hype men and a posse? I would want to make that as a sketch, that would be so freaking hilarious. Just like somebody like doing a little tune for toothpaste and then like their version of Flavor Flav.
Fresh whitening. And I love that because it's like, like it's one of those things, like you know, in like improv or whatever, it's like as long as you play within the rules that you establish, and like he plays within the rules of like the universe that he establishes at least for a bit, and then like you said, he might change it for the next bit, but it is like just sometimes it is like he's established like a world of like the joke is like, all right, this joke takes place in the real world, this joke takes place in the Matrix, this joke takes place in 1960s Looney Tunes, or like he bounces all around. And my favorite joke, I think, which is right near the end, I think it's actually like the closing joke, is when he's talking about his nephew, like his 1-year old nephew typing on his computer, and he'd be like, ah, you can't type, and then he's like, which is like but then, like, he says, like, the N-word before. But, like, it's like that's disrespectful to say to anyone, let alone a 1-year-old. And, like.
And he holds it deep inside. And it turns into a callback. It turns into a callback of a joke to a joke, like, halfway through the set. And it's like, that was a great one. That was definitely one of those ones that was up there. It's just
like, and the voice he does of his, his nephew, like, years later, be like, nah. You can't type. Like starting up.
Oh, joke's on you. Get me my metal arm from over there.
And that's also why, like, I always love it when it just feels so much more complete when I see a whether it's a stand-up special or an album, when it hear it like end on a callback, it feels more like closure. And so because sometimes there's some like comedians who they have like amazing specials. But then, like, the last joke, I'm like, okay, that was a pretty good joke, but it just kind of ended. Whereas, like, ones that end on a callback, it's why, like, Paper Tiger is my favorite Bill Burr one. I feel like it ends on, like, a meaningful callback. And, like, where he talks about, like, where it's, like, going back to his, like, emotional trauma and burying it. And then same with, like, how he brings it back to that metal arms joke, which is just, like, such a fitting callback for that joke. And, like, where it's like, oh, you can see he actually did some groundwork at the beginning of the album. And also just like how he like calls out like album structure and like makes fun of how like joke structure is done and saying like, oh, now is the intermission.
And it even goes back to the bit he was doing about gangster rap where he's like, they're smart. they're even though they're like, oh, I'm all street, they're still using traditional song structure because they need that ringtone money, baby. And it's like, basically he's kind of calling out the structure of the album. Because I mean, I was talking to Mark Hallworth about Nick Nemiroff's album. We were talking about how it's hard to be dumb. Like, it's easy to, like, it's not easy to do smart comedy, but it's easier than doing good, dumb comedy.
Yes, I agree. And Nick Nemiroff was a genius at that.
Yeah, and I kind of feel Hannibal Buress does that too, because this is structured perfectly, this album, because it's got it's got setups that put together some callbacks like later on in the album. It's got sort of waves. It's not just bang, 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 bang joke. It's got like building, building, building. Then you've got a release and it builds, builds, builds a little bit more. And then you've got a release and then it crescendos in the sort of the third wave with the final callback. I think it's
also he's not uncomfortable with a silence. Like if he has to take a break before he does, you know, like, cause like, and there's one thing I remember once, because this is a problem that I used to have so much, is that like if like a punchline or something didn't land or wasn't getting a laugh for more than like, you know, 15 seconds, I would speed up to try and get to the next punchline. Yeah. And then I was talking to Rob Bebenek, who's like, you know, a really great traveling, like, so he does a lot of touring comedy in Canada. And he was saying that like he got to the point where he could kind of enjoy the silence and just be like, all right, it's all right if they're not laughing now. I'll get them back and they'll enjoy themselves and they'll be satisfied and we'll do the job. And so that, and I think Hannibal Buress is like that. Like he'll take long pauses. He'll like where, because he knows it's like having that confidence where he's like, he knows he's going to get them back. Because some of the laughs he gets are like, I was like, if that was said with someone else's voice or someone else's timing, people wouldn't be laughing at it. That would just be like a setup line. But he's just so confident in like his ability to just like exude being hilarious. Like he's just like, I feel like he's the kind of person who like, if like he makes it feel like, I think I feel like his stand up, it makes you feel like you're just like hanging out behind a building, smoking a joint with him kind of thing. Like like we're all just like chilling out, telling jokes in the green room together.
There's just like this very sedate pacing that he has. It's almost like Stephen Wright or Norm Macdonald, like in a way, in that it's like he just takes his time to get to where he needs to be. Like the and I never knew this was a thing, that Flaming Dr. Pepper, which I'm like,
I didn't know about that either.
I'm gonna have to ask for that at some point, because I mean, I don't like Dr. Pepper, but I'm curious to see what it, how this drink tastes. But it's like, and I mean, and that's on the back of like something that really should, like a bunch of drunk driving jokes and alcohol, basically talking about his own drinking issues, which came to a head actually a few years later. But, you know, he's clearly aware that they're there and he's making fun of his own, like art galleries funding his drinking problem. So it's like coming off of the back of that into a very silly character piece where he does these great voices like, I'm working on something. It's like, I mean, I've been like not necessarily that aggressive, but Heather's like, what are you doing down there? I'm like, I'm editing podcasts. Kind of thing.
I've got a very important podcast I'm doing about comic books, and then I have a very important podcast about comedy albums. And I have three more very important podcasts, Heather. Like, and that's just gonna be like the guy could have like divorced his wife for someone who appreciates his like Flaming Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, exactly. When I'm rich with this Dr. Pepper money, which is like, that's about gonna happen the same time I'm rich on podcast money, buddy. So like there's a Terry's chocolate or Cherry's to whatever the chocolates that, you know, they always advertise on podcasts. I'm not getting that money. I'm not what the fuck podcast.
But I love that, like how he'll establish these fake characters. And what I love then is he also calls out like his own joke setup. Because then, what was it? There's the thing about the doctor. Oh yeah, the doctor saying doctor be like, oh, you're gonna need your nut worked on, and it's like, first of all, doctor, I say nut, you say testicle, and
let's be professional here.
Like that, because it's like the first bit's a funny joke because you're like imagining the doctor saying it, and then he's calling out the thing that he just made you laugh at in another funny way, and I love that bit. Like, I just think it's so funny, and like, just saying, like, it's like, you know, like, you've got like the punchline of you've got $17,000 in your mouth right now.
And from there he goes into the pornography stuff where it's like, in anybody else's hands, that wouldn't have been funny.
It would have been like, ooh, where's this guy going with this? But like, and then you said, like, with the drunk driving joke, like, he makes the drunk driving funny, and actually in a way, like, it's funny because, like, as cartoonish as he is sometimes, like you said, like, he is actually calling out like a reality, whether he's like talking, like, for example, with the, you know, like $17,000 to fix his testicles, that being, you know, like, look how expensive healthcare is in the US.
Primary healthcare that should basically be free. It cost him like $17,000.
Yeah, like a very crucial, important operation that like should be accessible to anyone who needs it. And then similarly, him calling out like drunk driving. And so like, even though he's making these drunk driving jokes, like where he's saying, I mean, like, it really is a rough joke to be like, oh, you know, like drunk drivers who get into crashes ruin it for the drunk drivers who are good at drunk driving.
Yeah, like, and then what does it say about all of those people who just like want the ride home and don't really care about their own safety? Just give me the burrito and shut up.
And to be honest, like, I mean, there was a time when I was younger for sure, like in my early 20s, where I'm like, like, you know, Billy's not that drunk. He can drive me home or whatever, like stuff like that. And like, similarly, like, it was like that kind of, when he made that joke, it made me think of like the times when, like, when my brother used to have like a substance problem. I'm like, well, he's not that high, he's not that messed up to like drive me home or whatever. I'm sure I'll survive. Like, but
and it's cool how he makes the twist in these jokes, like the YouPorn stuff. It was all about, it wasn't about porn really. It was about the community surrounding porn,
right?
And it's like, you know, like, well, you know, you're being racist while you're masturbating. Like, horniness trumps racism. But it was like bang, 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 and then that flowed into the syphilis taking a vacation, which was syphilis calling herpes on the phone, which was hilarious.
Like, which is also a thing I love is when, I mean, I love jokes that personify anything that is like an inanimate object, or I mean, like, syphilis, like it's almost like personifying like a concept.
And then he was like, hey, that joke is funnier than you give it credit. I just personified syphilis for 35 seconds on stage. Just like, and again, he's pulling it all the way out so you can see how absurd these concepts really are before zooming right back in to the moment. So it's cool.
It's so funny because there is like so much self-comment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And sometimes that kind of thing is the kind of thing that I actually like really dislike in comedy, when people spend too much time being like, oh, that joke was this. But I think because of the style that Hannibal Buress does with it, I think he does a very good job with that style. And I think that's why it works so well.
And I think, I think that goes to the lie of people complaining about woke comedy. Because it's not that you can't be funny about anything. You can be funny about literally everything. You just have to be funny. You have to be good. And it's just like, I mean, even, oh goodness, I'm forgetting his name, was in Toronto recently, does a lot of insulty comedy. He's playing the same night that we went to that one show. Anthony Jeselnik. It's like even Anthony Jeselnik is like, that's baloney. He's called it bullshit. Wokeism isn't destroying comedy. It's people who don't work to make their jokes funny. Like, it's your job to make people laugh. And if your punchline is something dark, you need to put in the work to get to that dark place.
Like, Anthony Jeselnik has a great joke about knocking out the eyeball of like a little girl, but like, it is like the way like it's done, like he sets it up and stuff, and like it is like within the context of like, he's like, you know, I'm being like a monstrous person by saying this, but we're all gonna laugh, but you're still gonna laugh at it because like either like, you know, it's like it's gonna be hella funny, or you're secretly a monster too, and you enjoy the joke. So let's just, you know, enjoy and then shut up, kind of thing, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. People will often come like, "Oh, you can't." You know, people will suspend their disbelief. Like nobody's canceled. I don't know, Sarah Silverman. Like people, like, she couldn't do that, or like, you know, people say you couldn't make Blazing Saddles anymore. Bullshit. You could, because sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you just have to make sure it's really good and you have good punchlines and
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if Mel Brooks was the age he was when he made Blazing Saddles today, he'd make whatever the equivalent was and it would be completely different, because it's, you can't make Blazing Saddles now, not because you can't talk about those things, but because the language and the mode is different.
Yeah.
And it needs to evolve. And it's just like, people are just static. I mean, like, even you look at how Hannibal brought down Bill Cosby effectively. It was a really sedate joke, and it just went viral because people
like, it was like a Ferris Bueller joke, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and it was like
yeah, it was like, anybody remember like Bill Cosby, like who, like, yeah, like anybody remember that, like he's like raped like so many women or whatever. It's like, anyone? Bueller. And it's funny because Seth Rogen was talking about how, I think he was at that show with Hannibal or whatever, or something like that. And he was like, someone mentioned Bill Cosby, and Seth Rogen was like, Bill Cosby is like one of my heroes. And then Hannibal was like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like, he did like all this, like he like has done all these horrible things or whatever. Seth Rogen was like, what? And then like, so, but it was like Hannibal who really was like, let's bring this up.
And right before that, because I mean, I kind of remember it from when I was in high school. Like, I remember it was a thing, but you know, in the 90s, you're like, oh, well, they settled, so it must have been okay for everybody. And it's like, you know, my teenage brain didn't understand that victims just want some kind of closure. And if that's the best that they feel they can get, that's better than nothing, kind of thing. But it doesn't make it right. So like, as an adult, I look back and I'm like, oh. But it completely sort of like faded from my memory because he was like this icon. And I went to see him at one of the casinos. I can't remember which one, but I was watching him. And I'm like, he's kind of a piece of shit. Like, he's kind of a horrible. It was just this sanctimonious old man. And then it all blew. I'm like, oh, yeah, he is he's a horrible person,
which is so interesting because like 90s Dan like loved, like if this was 90s Dan choosing an album, it would have been one of Bill Cosby's albums, because like,
oh god, yeah,
like my listening to them, and it's very interesting because Bill Cosby, very clean comedy, but then not so great a person in real life. Hannibal Buress, like, you know, making jokes about drunk driving, you know, like raping and pillaging, whatever, like all these other like really like, you know, like racism and pornography and stuff like that. Like lovely guy, sticks up for everyone, like that kind of person. Like,
even like, you know, Eddie Murphy, you know, in his early specials, he made some really homophobic remarks.
Right.
And he came back. And to this day, every time somebody brings it up, he's like, I was an idiot. Those jokes were stupid. I was young and afraid and I'm sorry. And like, to the point where the only people bringing it up aren't even the people who would be impacted about it, as people just trying to be like, what do you think about that? Like, so, but like, again, a totally nice dude. And whereas all of his material for years and years and years had sort of leaned into the bluer side of things. But it was interesting because it's just even when he's doing something that's kind of, you know, pushing the envelope, it's sedate. It's not like in your face kind of thing.
And I think that's also why, because he's just low key shifting into this gear. And so because of that, the audience is comfortable. He's not like, what do you think of this or whatever? Kind of like, you know, it's just kind of like, we're going to take a lazy left turn at drunk driving before we go into, you know, like something really silly, like, you know, the 16 bar structure of rap music or whatever. Which I love that joke where he's like, I'd love to talk about murdering more, but 16 bars are up, so we got to get into the chorus now. Because I need that ringtone money. It's just like, it's such a fun album. And I was just listening to it, like, you know, even though like I'd heard all these jokes before, and it just still feels like so fresh to me, even though it's like a 14-year-old album.
It's remarkably, you know, evergreen. Because I mean, there's nothing in here that's super time specific. There's nothing that's like, you know, just kind of like dated or of the moment. It's all very universal, which you don't get in many albums.
For sure. Really. And I mean, including my own, like there's definitely like a lot of like COVID lockdown specific material and stuff like that. But the one thing that he does, I will say, is his when he says Brock had a pretty cool job. Brock had a cool job. It's just so funny because he's talking about like the most powerful job in the world, but he's saying it as if like, oh, nice, like Barack Obama, he made manager. Like,
a good thing, what makes that evergreen too is really it's not about him becoming president. It's about him basically not working for 2 years on the job he did have to get a different job.
Right.
And then still keeping that job because he's like, if it doesn't work out, I'll just come back to this one, which is funny. Yeah. And again, that makes it evergreen. It takes something that could have been very topical and of the moment and turns it into something that is just more broad but also deeper.
Which is also, I think, one of the things that, again, like, it's like there's always, I feel like you can see his worldview in the silliest of his jokes, because like he's also calling out the absurdity of like politics and like political like positions and stuff, like how, and like what other job can it be where you like what other industry where you can just like abandon your previous job just so you can pursue another job, and then even if that job goes wrong, the other job, you can just go back to your old job, which is also going to be like a well-paying six-figure job with all kinds of crazy ass benefits, like
And he has this great mix of broad and hyper, like Debbie, what the fuck happened to my 4-page ad on Tuesday kind of thing when he's syphilis. And like, people not feeling me, I killed Al Capone. So it's like these really hyper specific references that like most people wouldn't even really get, not necessarily because they're over their head, but just they're obscure or kind of silly and weird. And then shifting into this baby's really shitty at time management, you know, so he like peaks and then he's like, he knows his audience. He knows his pacing. And this is like, you know, like you said, 14 years old at this point. This is still relatively early in his career. You know, I mean, this is what year did he was in? This would be around the time he was writing for SNL and 30 Rock.
I didn't realize he was writing for SNL.
Yeah, for 1 year, he only ever got one sketch on, which I do not know which sketch it is. I should track that down. But that's probably why he only worked for 1 year. But then he jumped over to 30 Rock because, I mean, it's a different beast. You can be a great writer and just not do well on SNL because, you know, it's the whims of Lorne and those Monday morning pitch meeting or Tuesday morning pitch meetings. And you know, if you don't have somebody else getting your back, you're probably not going to get material up and paid attention to.
Yeah, you got to do the John Mulaney move where it's like, I'll write the monologue. Because he was saying like his first week or something, like another writer said, hey, John, you and I, we're going to write the monologue. Because that way they knew that they would get something in that first week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a smart move. It's a smart move. Yeah. I just recently actually talked to Vanessa Jackson. She's an SNL writer on the podcast.
Oh, cool. Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah. Her episode went up just the other day about Aziz Ansari. It's his central moments for an intimate evening.
Cool.
But yeah, like we didn't talk too much about SNL because I didn't want to like, I wish I'd love to pick her brain about that, but it feels like a very high stress environment. From what I've read. It. Yeah. And I'm like, sure. I couldn't do it.
Whenever I listen to like episodes of Fly on the Wall, they're always talking about, yeah, like someone who'd be like, oh yeah, like, I mean, like Bill Hader had like an immunological like eye condition, like basically come to a head because of SNL. Like, so yeah.
I mean, I literally to this day have stress dreams about working at SNL because it's like one of those dream jobs and it's like, oh no, you really don't want to do that. Yeah. It's always like, I don't have a sketch. I'm on my way to meet Lauren and I'm naked for some reason. I don't know why. So I'm always naked, which is never good.
No, I forgot my clothes, but I'm right at the door.
but I got to pitch a sketch. What can I think of? But yeah, so it's pretty, yeah, it's pretty intense. But yeah, 1 year. But then he went into 30 Rock and it was clear he had a good relationship because he kept coming back. He played a bunch of semi-recurring characters and one-shot characters on the show. Yeah. So it's just like that, and that makes sense because it's kind of a more random show than SNL.
Yeah. Like, yeah, so like it's easy, like you can get like something who's like just hilarious for one or two lines in that episode.
Yeah.
And then I think shortly after that, then it was Broad City. He was like a major character in that.
Yeah. Let me just look one thing up. I totally forgot.
But I was going to say, just while you look that up. So speaking of Aziz Ansari, I remember listening to Aziz on, it might've been Pete Holmes's podcast years ago, but he was talking about how, cause people were saying how like Hannibal Buress moved up so quickly, but Aziz was saying like, he was just putting in the work and he was putting in the work doing a lot of stuff. And it was just at one point, just like all the things that he'd put like his energy and time into and his like talent into just finally all came to fruition. So like it was like years and years of hustling. And then just all of a sudden people were like, oh man, this guy's killing it all over New York and every comedy club. And then also like, you know, he's got like his funny like writing samples and stuff like that. And so then boom, he all of a sudden like has, you know, like a big album. He has all these other things come out. He's on SNL. He's on 30 Rock. He's going to go into Broad City and then starts getting Netflix specials.
Yeah, it's just the grind, you know. I mean, as much as that sucks, you have to get out and you have to perform and you have to do the writing. But I mean, I look at the other writers, like, you know, Donald Glover, who is a writer on 30 Rock as well. And I mean, again, it's that ability to go super weird, but still keep it semi grounded.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they worked on they were both good at 30 Rock. I mean, Donald Glover created Kenneth, which is
that character.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, it's weird, but yeah. So I think both of them worked in that format and that so well, because that they have that ability to grasp just the weird and the wacky, but they also are hard workers. Like, I know so many comedians out there, you know, and who just don't they feel entitled. It's like they feel entitled to a certain degree. Like they feel like, oh, I did this show, I need to be like headlining Yuck Yucks next week kind of thing. And it's like, that's not how this works. You know,
sure. And like, I think like what's nice is like Hannibal Buress, I think once he finally like started getting like his success and everything that started paying off, he then like he just had the confidence to be like, all right, I'm going to try this now. And I'm going to try this and, you know, like do a little bit of that. And he would like let himself get like, you know, weirder or take more risks on stage with his different specials and stuff like that. I mean, like, I love, he has like the most amazing like auto-tune joke in Miami Nights, his like I think is his last special, and it's one of those things where I'm like, oh man, like, because I think he went to like, I guess he took off comedy so he could focus on rap, and I don't hear of anything like that much about his rap career. I'm like, oh man, I'd love to see him come back and do another comedy special. Like, and it'd be great if he did, like, you know, because I feel like he'd have an amazing special talking about his like rap career or something like that. Like, he'd have such a great take on being a rapper. And actually, I did briefly get to see him once about 10 years ago, 2014. He opened for Dave Chappelle. This was back before Dave Chappelle made 17 specials about trans people.
Like 2014, it was still safe to say you went to a Dave Chappelle show and not have to worry about people being angry at you, kind of thing. Rightfully so. This is not in defense of Dave Chappelle. It's just time is he's not aged
for
well.
Sure. No, like it was, I think, like right where like he, like Chappelle was at his peak, and before he was also just like trying to churn out specials, and back when he was still like really building good specials. And so he had this, but he had like special guest openers, and Hannah Burris was the special like surprise guest opener. And it was like, so it was like February, it was the middle of February, and it was like minus 30 something outside or whatever, and Hannibal Buress like had this great joke where he's like, it is so cold out there, he's like, it's so cold that someone could freeze to death in front of you and you'd be like, damn, that is cold, but I gotta get inside. Like, and like the way he did it is just like, it's so funny, and like just like he's like, so like it was just like such a good like treat, to the point where like it was like as equally enjoyable seeing Hannibal Buress perform as it was, you know, like seeing the actual like main headliner show. Of Chappelle.
So now you have your own album, Family Boy. So when you were, I mean, like you said, you had a very different style of comedy, but when you were constructing your set for the album, how did you go about thinking about like what to put where and how to build it out?
Yeah, so I, for the most part, I tried to have things flow. I mean, I kind of almost have like sections. Like the first section is the Jewish section where I talk about like, I talk about my name, and then I talk about, you know, like this audiobook recording I got to do on anti-Semitism. And then it switches into like the Crohn's disease section. And so then that's where I'm, like talking more about bowel disease and stuff like that. And then it switches from there into the like, I have a wife section, and then the like pregnancy section and COVID section and stuff like that. So I kind of tried to like have things flow like that. But I guess the one influence that Hannibal Buress would have is that like I also wanted to make sure that I could take breaks to do like have little silly bits here and there where I could construct like a like I have a, there's one track called Abortion Jokes where I'm talking about like abortion laws and stuff like that. And I think one bit that, no, not necessarily done as good, I don't think I'd done as good as Hannibal Buress would do it, but I had a bit where I was like, what would like happen if there was like a law like where like, you know, pregnant women were allowed to like get like one murder per trimester or whatever. And I feel like that there is a Hannibal Buress influence in that, that I probably didn't realize until just now, because it is like in the middle of like talking about like a bigger topic that is a more like, sort of touchy subject that I, you know, never intended to get into, but then just like once I saw how rough pregnancy was for my wife, I was, and like also like the Roe v. Wade laws being made, like repealed, then I was like, all right, well, I do kind of want to talk about this. And pardon me, just thinking like, all right, but then also thinking of like how's a silly way to make my point about a more serious matter, because sometimes I think that's like those silly bits like that have then like a more serious implication behind them. Sometimes that's a better way in instead of trying to like hammer it home towards people. Like, so I think that's one way that I was influenced there. And also I want to do one track that is just like the silliest, stupidest song that I wrote that has like no rhyming in the song. It's like very like uncreative lyrics or whatever. But like, and it is a thing where like for like 30 seconds of the song, like there's not necessarily any laughter and people are like, huh? And then having the punchline after. And I was so proud because like a friend of mine who I saw on Friday, he was like, oh, I listened to your album. I played your pregnancy song for my pregnant wife. Like, I was like, oh, good. I'm sure she hated it just like mine. Like,
Now, if people wanted to find you online, find out what shows you had coming up, where could they go?
They can go to all the socials, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. Twitter is at Dan the Guy Rosen.
Awesome. And you can also find you at Detecting the Marvelous on wherever podcasts are downloaded.
That's right.
Where we and our friend Shahara talk about comic books.
That's right. So, yeah, sometimes I'm talking about comic albums and sometimes I'm talking about comic books.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a very good podcast. I highly recommend it. But I am also
as do I.
Very biased. We are very
as
biased.
As am I. But... so, yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Dan. And take care, everyone.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here comedy and showbizmonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Beauchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.